The way that I heard about this is I was preparing to go on a backpacking trip through Yellowstone, and my girlfriend at the time, now my wife, sent me a link to an article, and she was like, "This millionaire hid a treasure, and people are getting in trouble digging it up in Yellowstone." And I was like, "I don't think that's a real article. That seems like one of those clickbait articles at the bottom of websites that like you shouldn't click on." And so I went on this backpacking trip, and then I got back and I was looking around for stories, and I was like, "Wait, what about that millionaire story?" And I started looking into it, and the article she had sent me was the story of this guy, Daryl Seiler, who had gotten arrested hunting, treasure hunting in Yellowstone on one weekend. And then 2 weekends later, he got hauled out by search and rescue the first weekend. And then the next weekend, he was there, also again got rescued by Yellowstone search and rescue. And I just thought to myself, this is a guy who's not making rational decisions, or they didn't seem rational to me. I want to talk to this guy. Yeah. The
So,
remarkable thing is just that he came out of that mentally optimistic. Like, he is a person that sees the best in people and is trying to help people all the time. That's what just gets me.
welcome to the Wheel With It podcast with your host, Devin. At Wheel With It, we are dedicated to exploring DEI issues in a fair, balanced, and fun way. Let's get into the episode.
Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of Wheel With It. You guys will be hearing this is one of the first of 2024, but right now it's the last few weeks of 2023. And I am honored to have the host of probably one of the craziest podcasts I've ever heard, Miss Fortune, the host of that podcast, Peter Frick Wright, is on with us today. How are you, Peter?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
So first, tell us about yourself, and then we will go from there.
Okay. Jeez, I am a human male, 38 years old, born and raised in Portland, Oregon. I had a slight detour to Southern California for college and then came back and have been essentially trying to travel around and do interesting things and write about them and record them to share them with people ever since. And I did that for about 10 years, like completely freelance, bouncing around different magazines, different newspapers, things like that. And then the last, like, I guess 7 years, I've been mostly working for Outside Magazine. They found me at one point, and they found me as I was manically pitching them stories and brought me in from the cold a little bit. So I'm doing a lot of work for them since.
I guess we'll get right into it. First, tell us about Fortune Finn, and then how that led to, or Force
Yeah.
Finn, and then how that led to the podcast and the process of making that and everything.
Yeah. So Forrest Fenn was an art dealer in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And he was very successful at it. He was a well-known millionaire in a town full of millionaires. He was known for being quirky, interesting guy, just a little bit of eccentric, and like also part of sort of high society at the same time. He was professionally interesting, you might say. He had an alligator in his guest house. He hosted celebrities all through the 80s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s at his art gallery. They would come into town and stay there. And a guy like that, he was fond of saying, I'm not going to die in a hospital bed. I'm going to go out in a more interesting way. And let's see, in the late 90s, I believe, could have been early 2000s, he was diagnosed with cancer and given just like a couple months to live. They had a kidney operation. They took out his kidney, but the doctors did not give him a good prognosis. And when he got that diagnosis, he's writing a poem and collecting a treasure. And by treasure, I mean like a bronze box that he filled with gold nuggets, gold coins, diamonds, rubies, jade carvings, bracelets, like both stuff that was monetarily valuable and stuff that was valuable to him. And then he hid it somewhere and wrote a poem with clues to its location. And his plan back then was to, as he was dying, basically go out to the location, put the bronze chest somewhere, and then lay down next to it, probably take a bunch of sleeping pills and pass away. That was him going out on his own terms. And then he beat the cancer, to everyone's surprise, including his own. And then this treasure chest that he had put together just became something that was on display in his vault at his house. He would bring at parties, he would show it to people, he would take guests in and show it to them and then tell them his plan. And then in 2010, he decided, you know what, I think I'm just going to do this. And he did everything that he had planned. He put the treasure out there. He wrote the poem, published it in a memoir. And then the only difference was he did not die next to the treasure. He went back to his house, told people about it, answered questions about it. And when a young aspiring podcaster in 2013 emailed him and said, hey, I'm going to be in Santa Fe. Can I swing by your house and let's talk about your treasure? He said, yeah, come on by. And so I was blurring the truth about going to be in Santa Fe. I was living in Portland and I like barely had enough money to drive there and sleep in rest stops on the way there and back. But I did. And I went and talked to him. And that was
kind of, you wanted to go there. So that's, I'm going to be in Santa Fe.
Yeah, I'm going to be in Santa Fe if you say yes to this interview. So
how, tell us about, first of all, how did he strike you? Was he like a nice guy? That's a nice guy.
He was, I would describe him as like your consummate like host. He was friendly. He was nice to talk to. The hard part was, as a journalist, he was on his script. He was going to say the things that he was going to say, and he was going to, no matter what question I asked, he was going to find a way to direct it back to the narrative that he wanted to talk about. And we clashed a little bit over that. I wanted to ask him about some controversies in his past, about the accusations that he was digging up graves and selling off Native American artifacts. And he did not want to talk about that. And at one point made me turn off the recorder and we had to decide, okay, where's the rest of this interview going to go? So yeah, a gracious host, a really nice guy, a very like energetic guy, but not the most open. And I don't know how to describe him. He was guarded. He was cautious. And that's to some extent understandable because he's protecting the location of a treasure that he put out in the world.
So tell us about like how crazy people went to find for this and how you met the main guy whose name escapes me at the moment that you profiled in the podcast.
Yeah, Daryl.
Daryl, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Before I interviewed Forrest, the way that I heard about this is I was preparing to go on a backpacking trip through Yellowstone. And my girlfriend at the time, now my wife, sent me a link to an article. And she was like, this millionaire hid a treasure and people are getting in trouble digging it up in Yellowstone. And I was like, I don't think that's a real article. That seems like one of those clickbait articles at the bottom of websites that like you shouldn't click on. And so I went on this backpacking trip and then I got back and I was looking around for stories and I was like, wait, what about that millionaire story? And I started looking into it and the article she had sent me was the story of this guy, Daryl Seiler, who had gotten arrested treasure hunting in Yellowstone on one weekend. And then 2 weekends later, he got hauled up by search and rescue the first weekend. And then the next weekend he was there. Also, again, got rescued by Yellowstone Search and Rescue. And I just thought to myself, this is a guy who's not making rational decisions, or they didn't seem rational to me. I want to talk to this guy. This guy obviously cares very deeply about this. And if you care very deeply about something, you're probably going to be interesting to talk to you about it. So I actually started reaching out, started doing a couple phone calls. That's when I got, someone said, if you email Forrest Fenn, he'll probably talk to you. So I sent that email. I went and talked to Forrest. Came away from the Forrest Fenn interview shell-shocked in a way. Like, I was hoping that interview was going to be like an entire story. I was going to be able to turn it into something great. And he was guarded enough and cautious enough that I didn't feel like I had gotten what I needed to write a story about it. And so I came home dejected and sad. And a couple of weeks later, I was going up to Seattle anyway. And I said to myself, you know what? This guy that got arrested is in Seattle. I'm just going to set aside 2 hours, go talk to him at his place. And I walked up to his house. Like, I remember I knocked on the door, or like he was already outside waiting for me the first time. I went there so many times. But he was holding his laptop and he had it open to a picture of the treasure. And he's, I found the treasure. Let's go get it. Are you free next weekend to drive out to Yellowstone? And we just went on this gonzo overnight drive all the way to Yellowstone, like 15 hours in the car, hop out, run to the place he thinks the treasure is, look around for it. It's not there. Go back, collect ourselves, try and figure out where we went wrong. And then it just turned into that early stage was like a year of going on trips with him, like on a pretty regular basis. Like there are trips to Yellowstone, like entire weekends that I spent out there that and spent the whole time recording him that didn't make it into the podcast.
So what was he like? Just what was Daryl like to spend all that time with him? You must have got to know him very well.
I did. I love Daryl. He is thoughtful. He is intelligent. He would talk about anything. He's a good storyteller. He's got an interesting history. He was, on the one hand, like the most put together guy you'd ever meet. Great job. Like works with engineers, like has a normal day job recruiting engineers for aerospace companies, can speak that language, can talk about football, can talk about all sorts of stuff. It's just that he also is obsessed with the Forrest Fenn treasure hunt. Like it gave him something that he needed on a deep human level. And so he could talk about anything on all these drives, these 12-hour drives out there, 12-hour drives back. Mostly what he wanted to talk about was the Forrest Fenn treasure. And so we spent a lot of time talking about his theories, the other trips he'd been on, all of that stuff. It wasn't until later, or I guess it was in some of the like the middle of our time together, we did these sit down interviews. We didn't talk about it much on the drives. We did these sit down interviews and he would talk about his history and like his past. And his mom was white. His brothers and sisters were white from a different dad. And he didn't know who his father was. And so he had he described it as like this basically like deep sense of alienation. And a very, just like the, some of the stories he would tell about his childhood were horrific and very sad. And his shorthand way of describing it was like these guys that his mom would date, like they just didn't like the black kid. And he was a kind of by necessity turned into a survivor. And I think viewed the world through that lens of trying to figure out how he was going to. And also, but the interesting thing about Daryl and the lovely thing about Daryl is like what that did to him. Like you can react to that, to like really terrible life situations in multiple ways. And his reaction was like, he wanted to make the world a better place. Some people would encounter that would just go through child abuse and trauma and they would want to burn the world down and say, screw this, I hate everything and everyone. And he was like, I want to fix the world. I want to right these injustices. And I think that's been like a common thread through his life. One of the common threads in his life is he loves a treasure hunt and he loves that feeling of being on the path to chasing something. And the other one is he's trying to do good in the world all the time.
Yeah, which is crazy considering the childhood that he had.
Yeah, yeah. It is, Daryl's an amazing guy. And I'm glad, like, we've been talking even since the podcast came out, and I'm glad to still be in touch with him.
Yeah, I would love to talk to Daryl as well.
So. Ask him about treasure hunting.
Yes.
He's into it.
Why do you think people were so into this hunt? Because they did a whole 48 hours on it about how crazy people would go. And even while I was listening to the podcast, I wasn't that into it, but while I was listening to the podcast, I'm like, oh, it's got to be over there. It's got to be over there. It's got to be over there. What makes this treasure hunt so, like, appealing?
I think in some sense, it was so unique. It's like this, to borrow incomplete phrasing, it's like this unique American thing of anyone can go looking for this thing. It says in the poem, if you find it, you can keep it. It's just, it's like an equal playing field and the winner gets $1 million. So similar to like your favorite.
Yeah. Survivor. Yeah. Survivor. Yeah.
And then I think the other part of it is just we've romanticized the treasure hunter as this kind of like character. It like personifies the American dream, right? Of through your own efforts, you find something and suddenly all your problems have been solved. I think that's the, I talked to a bunch of different treasure hunters, and one of them I remember very clearly told me like people are out there because they have problems in their life, and like $1 million is going to solve those problems. And I think the thing people don't realize is that getting sucked into a treasure hunt so deeply that you are risking your life, spending money you don't have, going on trip after trip, that creates a lot of problems. And a lot of those problems, money can't solve, where you're betraying people's trust, losing jobs. Those are things that happened.
And I got way into it, not way into it, but more into it when I was listening to the podcast. And I went and told my dad, I said, if we're ever in Yellowstone and we see something weird, like we know what it is. But it's crazy. It's crazy that it stayed that well hidden for that long, to the point where I was starting to think, oh, he, Forrest just must have done this as a publicity stunt to sell the books. But yeah. I was into, oh my gosh, where is it?
And where do you think it was?
I think it's probably, I don't know the exact location, but I know it's probably like close to where Daryl was, because he had some very good finds on those clues. And it's probably a place he walked past 15 times and just didn't see it, which makes it so frustrating.
Yeah. After the treasure was found in 2020, like right after Yellowstone opened back up to the public. And I'd say for a long time, no one thought it was in Yellowstone, or very few people did. Daryl kept going back there. He never thought it was anywhere else. But I remember when the park opened back up, and like the next day or 2 days later, there was an announcement from Forrest that it had been found. I just remember being like, that is too much of a coincidence. And like, how heartbreaking would it be if Daryl was close? And
yeah, then, that's what I wonder too. How many times did he walk right by that place?
Didn't see it. Yeah, nobody knows. We know it was in Yellowstone. We know it was, like, for certain. That was part of the legal maneuvering after the case with Yellowstone park rangers. We got to know that it was there, but we don't know exactly where.
So where do you think it was, like, exactly?
Oh man, I go back and forth. You can do, if you do a deep dive looking at the different theories, there's one spot that a lot of people think it is, and I can't remember the exact place or like the way that people get there, but there's like an answer that the finder has pushed people towards, and a lot of the kind of more high profile searchers have pushed people towards. And then to me, there's like Daryl's answer, which is in a slightly different place. And for Daryl's answer, I think if Daryl was right, or if Daryl was close, I think the clues in the poem were like, it was a good poem. It was good clues. Fenn was clever and interesting and like incorporated history and made the study of the area the key to solving the poem. If it was this other place, Fenn kind of, it's just not as good of a poem. It's not as good of a hunt. If it's this other place, it makes it so that the only way to find the treasure would be to study Fenn's life. And it becomes this kind of like more about him and about just like his ego a little bit. And so I like want it to be where Daryl was, both for Daryl's sake in a way. And I want this to be like a really good poem and a really good treasure. but I don't know.
Yeah, I want it to be where Daryl was for his sake and for the sake of the poem, but I don't, because then he's going to be beating himself up. Like, I walked past that place like 15 times and did not see it. It's crazy. So do you think Forrest helped the finder find it, because it was found so soon after Yellowstone was opened up to the public and he died shortly after that?
I do not think that Forrest helped the finder find it. I think that the finder basically told the truth and is found it in the place that he said he found it. Do you think there is some question as to when he found it? But I don't think he had any help. I think he found it before, long before he told Forrest, and long before it was announced to the world. But I don't think he had any help. I think it was a straight up fair treasure hunt. I think if Forrest was going to choose someone to win, I don't think he would have chosen Jack, the finder.
Yeah. And Jack needed the money because he was in medical school. And that must be an untold amount of expense. He basically got a almost full scholarship to med school and got to go on a treasure hunt. What's better than that? So
yeah. Yeah, I think it would have been better than that if the treasure had been worth more than it was.
Yeah, how much was it, and how much did it end up being worth?
It's a really hard number to figure out. The estimates while the treasure hunt was going on kept getting bigger. Like, it started at $1 million, and then very quickly it was $2 million. And then it was like $3 to $5 million. We did like a montage of all the different TV stories saying the worth, and it's like a different number every time. And I don't know. So it was eventually sold at auction, and I don't know how much the finder sold it to the auction house for, but I did some number crunching based on kind of the sale item. So they sold it off piece by piece. They had an auction online and you could buy each individual coin or a gold nugget or various things from the treasure. And just...
Did you buy the actual box?
I don't remember if it was up for sale or if Jack decided to keep that, but I think you could. And Fenn always said it was like a $50,000 box. It was this ornate carving kind of thing. But it was the size of about a box of cereal. It wasn't a huge thing. But when you add up all of the numbers, and again, like, we don't have perfect data on what this was, like what each thing sold for and the total price overall. But I remember looking and it was like, if things were going as it looked like they were going in the auction, if the resale prices were a rough representation of what the items sold for originally, then it was about like 1.3, 1.5 million.
Which is not chump change if you need money. So
no.
1.3 million sounds about pretty good right now. Hey.
Yeah. It was about what was promised by Forrest originally. So you can't really complain. But I think if there was talk of trying to sell it to Treasure Island Casino or something for $10 million. And that's a different level of money. And
yeah,
it never got that.
So how is Jack doing? Have we heard from Jack?
We haven't heard from Jack in a while. I got an email from Jack once. He responded to something I wrote, but I've never talked to him. And I don't know. I don't know how he's doing. I hope he's doing okay. I think that finding the treasure put his life, and all of a sudden he had problems that you wouldn't, that are not like the first thing you think about when you find a treasure or when you start to go on a treasure hunt. It's not what you imagine. There were people coming out of the woodwork with legal claims saying that they were the real finder. He had to negotiate sort of legal complications on all sides. So like, he had to figure out, because it was in Yellowstone, there's like park policies for abandoned property.
Yeah.
That he had to negotiate. He had to negotiate a bunch of people saying, Jack didn't find the treasure, I found the treasure, but I just couldn't go get it, so I have this legal right. So there were lawsuits. I went and attended one of them in Santa Fe right before the podcast came out. And it was a guy saying, I solved the poem and I put a camera on a stick and put it into a hole, and there was the treasure. Like, you can see like that little outline of the side of the treasure box, but I was too afraid of snakes So I didn't want to put my hand in the hole to grab the treasure. So the family owes me the value of the treasure. This is a, I can't remember, 3-day trial that I sat through.
That's and, crazy.
Yeah. So he had to negotiate that. I understand why Jack was so cautious and only did one interview with this other journalist, Dan Barbarisi. I'd love to talk to him someday, but.
I'd love to talk to him and find out where the heck that thing was.
I don't think he'll tell you. I don't think he'll tell you.
I know. A woman can dream, but I would love to find out where the heck that thing was. So.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
How's Daryl doing now, and how's his relationship with his family?
It's good. The last I heard from him, he was living in Arizona, but about to move to Washington State to be closer to his son. And his relationship with his family is good. Part of the story of finding his family was like how much harder it was for Daryl to integrate into this family than for the family to bring him in. His biological father had a lot of children. And so finding out that Maynard Cannon had a son that the family didn't know about, they were actually like, it had happened before. And it's actually happened since the podcast came out. There's another kid got in contact. And so Daryl has another brother. But it's just really nice to see him having this relationship and this kind of like extended family life that he never had growing up in Seattle, where they would leave him home when they all went to the big family Christmas gathering because he was black and everyone else was white.
Which was heartbreaking to hear. I cannot imagine being on the other side of that from your own family. Like, it's one thing for people outside your family to marginalize you, but when your own family marginalizes you, it's...
Yeah.
So... Yeah.
The remarkable thing is just that he came out of that mentally optimistic. Like, he is a person that sees the best in people and is trying to help people all the time. That's what just gets me, is like to be that unsupported. And when I talked to his mom, she was like, no, like he had more support than he gives me credit for. Like, I think both things can be true. I think Daryl had a really hard childhood and a really rough upbringing, but his mother loved him and did her best, and she came from a really tough situation and was doing her best as well. And I kept him safe, I kept him fed, he was doing well in school, he was smart. He doesn't give me credit for that stuff, and it really made me think of just everyone is going through the world and just trying to navigate the problems that are in front of them. And no matter what your situation is, you're going to have obstacles. Like, that's just like what being human is, right? Is you're going to encounter things that are hard and really hard and emotionally difficult and make you want to give up or make you feel like you don't deserve happiness or don't deserve the things you want. And like, everyone is going through that. It's just a matter of which obstacles are being thrown their way. People with parents who love them are dealing with different sets of obstacles than people who like don't have parents. People who are physically able are dealing with different obstacles than people who aren't. And but we're all dealing with obstacles all at the same time. And it like I've never met anyone who's just like, my life is so easy.
No, you might be like that as a kid, but once you get to be 20 something and know how the world really is, you're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. And so like the only thing we can do, and like the thing that Daryl's story always makes me think of, is like all you can control is like how you react to those situations and those obstacles, and like how you mentally say, okay, here's the problem, here's what I'm gonna do, and it's either gonna, I'm gonna let it change me as a person, or I'm not. Because he just said, I think the world is a good place, I think people are generally good, and I want to help them. And he did not have to maintain that outlook through his life the way he has, I don't think anyone would have blamed him if he was just like, the world is a terrible place and I hate everyone and I don't want to participate in it.
Yeah, and that he's amazing. I want to talk to him. Anything else you want to add before we get off here? And what else is coming up for you? Any more crime treasure type podcast? Or
we're working on or thinking about a second season about a different treasure hunt story, which is it's fascinating and interesting for different reasons. I think Daryl's were more personal and individual journey. This one is more bigger, like a society. But I just restarted hosting the Outside podcast just a couple weeks ago. So that's going to be my gig for a time. And we're just, Outside podcast is stories about the outdoors, the human body, adventure, danger, survival, and just like weird stuff that I find interesting. So
kind of like this.
Exactly. Something weird I find interesting that just turned into a big story.
Where can people follow you on social media?
Oh, I find that having a weekly podcast that I have to host is exactly as much like social media interaction as I need.
Yep.
So I don't really, you can follow me on Twitter and then just like email the show or email Outside to get in touch.
Okay.
Or a message on Twitter is fine.
Okay. We will put that in the show notes. Thank you so much for being on. You were awesome. And we will see you guys next episode. Bye, guys.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to follow the show and our guests on social media and subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast app using the links in the show notes. Please remember to rate and review us. See you next time.